Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron, and I want to welcome Jasmine to the studio. Hello, how are you doing?
Morena, Aaron. Nice to see you.
Yes, it's a nice day outside too, isn't it?
It's
still
a
cold?
Bit crisp, isn't it?
A bit crisp, yeah. We were talking about that when Dougal was here. I thought it might have warmed up a bit.
Yeah, no, it's that confusing time of year where you're freezing in the morning. From about 5, it starts getting cold, eh? And then,
yeah.
You get into the afternoon and it's hot.
Yeah, it was really hot in here
what
yesterday afternoon.
What do I wear?
If you bring everything and then forget half of it on the way home.
Yeah.
I think that's the policy. So it's quite an environmental morning this morning. We were talking to Dougal Greer earlier about sediment plumes and the EPA and all that.
Yeah, I did catch part of that interview, and I thought I recognised the voice, but man, what a fascinating interview. And because I only caught a snippet, I am waiting for your online drop.
The podcast. Podcast will go up later today. Then Maki will share it probably because people are interested.
Cool.
We actually had someone... A car pulled up just as we finished the interview, and Kate, who I interviewed a few weeks ago, leaps out. She's still got her towel on from having been to the beach. So I thought it was a perfect Raglan moment, coming back from the beach, listening to stuff about the beach.
Oh, was that Kate Evans?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I bumped into her the other day with just a towel on as well, and we had a chat. Yeah, she's doing a lot of surfing at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was – I like that because it's a bit of feedback as well.
Yeah.
To know that, like, people care about that. So,
That's right.
And Dougal did explain it really well. So, yeah.
I think it's pretty easy to listen to Dougal.
True. He's got a good accent. But the science, I understood the science right away. Like, he pitched it at a level that was working.
So,
for the Environment Centre, you've just had a couple of big events happen. Well, Maui Dolphin Day was a little way away, but Science Night, that was just last week.
It was, yeah. It was probably our biggest turnout yet, actually, to Science Night.
Yeah, to talk about weeds. And I turned up and I was thinking, oh, you know, what's this going to be like? But I came away with a very different perspective by the end of it.
Mm. Well, it was about forest restoration.
Yeah.
So we talk about weeds, but really, what's the goal? The goal is restoring our natural environment.
Yeah.
And one of the ways is the weed issue, the pest plants that have invaded our native forests, and then of course there's also like the other pests like the rats and the
but we know about them, we're aware of them, we're more aware of them. The only thing I knew about that was affecting the native forest was wilding pines. And I was aware that wasn't a good thing, but this is a whole different...
It's a whole different kettle of fish, and I don't think people really understand the extent of the pest plant problem.
Yeah.
It's
just warming up. Like,
yeah.
That's the thing about it. It doesn't look that bad at the moment, but it's just warming up, and in maybe a couple of decades, I don't know, it could be quite alarming.
It's a big problem.
Yeah.
One of the takeaways for me was there was a – because Jeff Reed, he and Peter Russell, they had some really incredible drone footage that they'd taken of some of the forests that they've been working in. One of the images, the videos, was going through a beautiful Cody forest, but the floor of the forest was just – all a vine pest plant, completely covered. And Jeff was explaining how, the seedlings that were dropping out, growing out of the forest floor, weren't actually going to get anywhere, grow any further, because of the coverage of this pest plant. And he described that image of you were looking at a dying forest.
Or did he say ghost forest?
Ghost forest. That was the word I'm trying to think of it. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's still there, but it's...
It's a ghost forest because there's not going to be any trees to replace the ones that are there.
And you mentioned Cody trees, and people might be like, well, they last a long time, but that happens with other forests as well.
And also, we've got to stop thinking just within our lifetime.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, so the Cody tree lasts hundreds of years. Well, still bad if it... It ends up just being a bunch of vines on the ground.
And then I was explaining that to a friend of mine, that how that that image, that video footage, really resonated with me, and how sad it was. It just felt really sad to think that that is the state of a lot of our forests at the moment. And she went to a...
So this is patches within the native forest at the moment.
Yeah, and it's spreading.
Yeah.
But she went to a festival which is held in a forest, and she'd been to that festival before. It's a beautiful location. She was really enjoying it. And then she looked down and she realised that the same thing was happening in that forest that she was, that 500 people were having a party in. And everyone's like enjoying this natural, beautiful outdoor space, unaware that below their feet there's and surrounding them is this, you know, as a pest plant that's just invading that forest and destroying it.
Yeah, the image that got me was they showed an aerial image of a place where they had spray. Sometimes they say none of those guys like to use sprays, but sometimes the problem is so huge it's the only way.
Mm.
And they'd sprayed an area where there were vines, and then the aerial photograph showed after the vines had gone, and all that was left in that patch was dead trees. You could see just these grey kind of blobs where these dead trees were. So that was like, so it was like, great, we got rid of the vine, but then what's left?
Yeah, the other takeaway for me was when they were explaining how a really one of the most, the best ways to contain the pest plant from spreading was really look at the weeds on the roadsides and on the borders of areas.
Yeah.
Because it's about containment as well. Like we really need to be focusing on stopping the pest plants from spreading. That's like an immediate thing we can do.
Yeah.
So, and then I was talking with Peggy yesterday about the drive out to Whale Bay, how it's just littered, the roadsides are littered with weeds. And you think about I can remember years ago when suddenly it was like all of a sudden woolly nightshade was everywhere, and it hadn't been, I hadn't noticed it before really.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's just everywhere. And I think that is the key thing, is like we really need to be focusing on those boundaries and the spread.
Yeah.
So it's roadsides, and roadsides are a big thing, is like trying to get rid of those pest plants on roadsides.
Yeah, and it's, the thing about it suddenly being everywhere, of course, is that the preceding years it had just been colonising little bits here and there, and then had done enough of that, and then just suddenly accelerated.
Mm.
And we're, as far as our native forests are concerned, what they're saying is we're at that point where there's just little bits here and there, but we could end up, if we just ignore it in a few years, we'll be suddenly we'll be like, oh no, we've got a disaster.
Well, that's right, and I don't think people appreciate that's what Jeff was trying to point out on the notice board about the phoenix.
Let's talk about that. Yeah,
got a problem with them.
Yeah, it was funny when we did I did the interview with the guys the next day, and Jeff was talking about the phoenix palms, and I was like, oh man, those palms out there, people love those in this town, and he got a lot of flack on the notice board, but not that that's, it's pretty easy to get flack on the notice board.
Yeah.
But a realization that, and certainly maybe those palms are a little bit isolated because they're in the middle of town, surrounded by asphalt. But we've got them growing in other places as well.
Yeah, and maybe we shouldn't be. They're spreading all over the show. And I honestly, I think nobody denies the fact that visually it's a really, that it looks amazing.
Yeah.
Visually it looks incredible. But before those phoenix palms were there, there were pahutukawa down the middle of the street.
Yeah.
That got chopped down.
Yeah, by the council.
And replaced by phoenix palms.
John Lawson got this wonderful interview with a lady called Connie Stevens, who's since passed on. He must have done it over 10 years ago. And she was the one who saved the last two, I think there's two, is it, down opposite the Bond Bakery near the council. There's a couple of pahutukawas there. And she, because what happened was, what used to happen in Raglan then was all the shopkeepers, they would go to Hamilton on Wednesdays.
Mm.
And they'd do all their
town would close.
Yeah, they do their city business on Wednesdays.
Too.
And they came back and discovered most of the council had chopped down most of the pahutukawas in the middle of the street. And so the next morning she chained herself to one of them so the workers couldn't.
Who was that?
Her name was Connie Stevens.
Connie Stevens.
And she used to run the bakery, which is where the jewellery shop is down at the bottom of Bow Street now.
Mm.
So she was in there. And I think the hardware store at the back was part of that.
What year was that, sorry?
Oh, we'd have to ask John Lawson, but that would be, I think we're talking 50s or 60s or something like that.
Have you got recordings of these?
That we've got a recording of that, yeah. Yeah, I could dig that out.
Mm.
Which is a wonderful little story about Raglan.
It is, yep.
But also imagine what the main street would have been like with those down it as well. It's such a lovely area down under those
trees.
Maybe
that would be a good article for that story. Would be a great article in the Chronicle. It's so current.
Yeah. The day a Raglan resident saved their trees.
Yeah, and also I know of a because those the fronds that fall from the phoenix, you can actually get, like, it's actually quite serious if you get stabbed by one of those prongs.
People were saying that, because
there was a little kid only at the end of last year that got actually ran, accidentally backed into one of the prongs, and it punctured their skin. Yeah.
One of our kids' soccer balls got killed by one of those once. Yeah. Which was, that's getting off
but
lightly.
But they're poisonous.
And not only that, but serious, solid, serious. Solid things. That's the problem. They're
I just find it really interesting that people get so irate about loving these phoenix palms when really there's not, I mean, they're not in great condition though, because the ones over Oran Park were planted at the same time, weren't they?
No, they were planted sometime later as spare plants.
Oh, so they're actually not even as old, and they're probably twice as big.
The council decided to plant them. Good point, because it's healthier over there. The council decided to plant those ones at Oran Park as backups for these. If any of them died, then they had a ready-to-go replacement.
Right.
So, and the guys were talking about, you know, the Nikko palm is, that's the native palm. That's the one we should be using. Mm. And that would be cool to have Nikko palms down here. But I get why there's an attachment to these, because they provide a kind of sense of feeling of shelter in the town.
I think
it's really nice to have them, and they look good.
I think they look good too.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone denies they look good. They create a sense of central, like, courtyard, kind of main, like, majestic main street.
It actually performs a psychological purpose for people.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think Jeff's suggestion was also to, like, think about a long-term plan, which is in theory, we should be planting some natives in between them or next, you know.
Yeah.
And give them a chance to... Like thinking about long term,
or taking a leaf out of the old council's book, planting some plants at Oran Park now.
Oh yeah.
So when they get big, then they can be transferred over here, and we have such good technology for that these days.
That's right.
Yeah, I know. We did lose a palm right down the end a few years ago. I think it snapped in the wind, but unfortunately they couldn't replace that one fortunately, depending on your perspective now, because its roots were entangled with the pahutukawa next to it.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, they would have damaged the pahutukawa, which nobody wanted to do.
No.
Yeah. So that's a debate, and I think your point about we need to make a plan.
Mm.
Yeah, rather than just noise on the notice board, I think a constructive plan, and you present that to the community, people will be like, oh yeah, I get that.
Yep.
There'll still be some complaining.
Sounds like a good regular naturally plan.
Maybe, job. Yeah. Let's give them some work. Yeah.
They just need more work, though. Being sarcastic.
Maui Dolphin Day. You were the organiser for Maui Dolphin Day. I thought it went really well. I was super busy, but I did turn around a couple of times to note that there were a heck of a lot of people there.
Yeah, do you estimate it at? I'm really struggling with this one.
You don't know. You see how many people are there in the given moment, but you don't know how many are coming and going.
Previous years.
It seemed similar to me.
Yeah, okay. So previous years, we've estimated around 1,000 people.
Yeah,
yeah. So it did feel similar, especially I think the telling point is when you look at the bridge during the raft race and at the banks. And I know that in the past, people have made an effort to try and really, who know what they're doing, know how to count crowds.
Yeah.
And it's been around 800 to 1,000. But I know that there was one year where they thought it was up to 1,200. But, yeah, I reckon it was similar.
You'd almost want an aerial photograph, get a drone.
Oh, 100%. I have, yeah, it would be nice. If anyone out there who has a drone that's good at catching footage that would like to offer up their service for next year, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. I thought it went really well, and we had.
Yeah.
And given that it was been a gap of 3 years since the last one.
3 years.
And I know that KD only got the funding near the end of last year, so there was... It was sort of like, okay, we got the funding, let's go. It made it more challenging than normal as well. So I think it went really well in the end.
Actually just in February that we got the funding.
Oh, there was another bit of, yeah. You get, I guess there's other
the
bits.
Main, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, so it was all go. And fortunately for me, I had a really good, backup.
Yeah.
With my colleagues at Extreme Zero Waste and WEC. I was really, really lucky.
Yeah, it's not just a one-person job.
No, it's definitely not. And I just think it was such a great day. I think everyone was really, really needing that community, a community event that brought us all together.
I've been hanging out for that. So
yeah, and yeah. there was a funny moment. It was at right at the start when the kids were singing the Maui Dolphin Day song, and everyone's sitting around on the hay bales, and there are a few familiar faces. It took me back to when my daughter was, you know, in primary school singing the Maui Dolphin song, which wasn't that long ago, but there were some people, we were all looking at each other and everyone was like, oh my gosh, it's back.
Yay. Yeah, right. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It was really lovely. And it was jam packed. It was really jam packed. It was a busy day.
Yeah.
It went really well. And there was something that I think we've discussed is that the most noticeable difference this year was that usually in the past the raft race happens and everyone leaves, and which is why we started scheduling the raft race for the end of the event. This time it didn't happen. Everyone stuck around right till the very end of Maui Dolphin Day.
Yeah. There was still a big crowd around.
There was,
around
so it was like people were there consistently for the 4 hours, which was amazing.
Yeah,
it was wonderful.
And do you know what I discovered? I interviewed one of the Headless Chickens.
I didn't know
that was he's the head of Sea Shepherd in New Zealand.
Oh, Sea Shepherd, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Michael I didn't Shepherd, know. Sorry. I was like, when I went to I uploaded the interview as a podcast, and so I had to get his name right. So I googled him, and it came up that he was the founding member of the Headless Chickens. I was like, oh my god, I interviewed.
I still listen to the Headless Chickens. Yeah,
no, me too.
I've
yeah.
got one of their songs is one of my favourite songs on my playlist.
Yeah, he's now a very very unassuming guy, but looking after sea shepherds in New Zealand. So,
yeah, him and his partner. He's such a good. Really lovely people.
So we've reminisced, but we should talk about what other things are coming up. And maybe since we've mentioned Science Night, let's go back to that and just your plans for the future.
Well, there's different people I'm talking to at the moment, but some of the topics that we're looking at potentially having coming up are really interesting because. So there's a woman in the Coromandel I met at the end of last year down in I was at a hui in Otapoti in Dunedin, and I met this woman who in the Coromandel is kicking off the first. She got funding to start the first, instead of a worm farm, it's a maggot farm.
Ooh, delightful!
It's a certain type of fly that it's not a bio risk. But it only lives for one day and it doesn't actually travel far and it does not threat to anything. But it lays this maggot that the maggots that it lays, lots of them, it's got a very short lifespan but very fast, and it chews through food so quickly, like it's such a fast rate, way faster than tiger worms. You can actually hear them eat. When it's on that scale.
Can we get a recording for the radio, please?
Well, yeah, so she's really keen to do a science night, so I'm just working out dates. And then in May, there is it's International Composting Day, week, I think it is,
right.
And or month. Extreme Zero Waste and Work have got a whole raft of ideas that they want to throw around to or want to get organised to really focus on composting. And so we'll have a guest speaker for Science Night around composting. There is someone else that is Sarah Oliver's put me in touch with a couple of people. One of them is a woman who Native Bee. I've been wanting to do Native Bees for a couple of years, and so I'll finally get to do that. And then there's also someone in Taranaki who studies native worms. So, yeah, we're really going down the road of bugs.
Yep. Well, they're important. They're little, but they're important.
Yeah, but I'd really love people in the community who are an expert in any area that relates to sustainability or conservation, environmental, just to come at me with your topics that you'd like to present at Science Night. Yeah.
Maybe we should get Dougal to do some sediment plume modelling. Live to an audience.
Yeah, that would be really interesting, actually. Yeah, fascinating. I am going to be hitting Dougal up.
Yeah, because afterwards he asked me, he was worried that it was too scientific and hard to latch onto, but it wasn't at all. He was brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know whether what he does could fill up an hour. Maybe he'll do it with someone else who was also submitting to
You don't actually end up doing a full hour of talking about your topic, like presenting, because we've got an hour, but it's Raglan, so it doesn't start at the time on the dot. We have to allow for, 5 minutes for everyone to arrive, for starters.
of course.
I'd say that question time really takes up quite a lot of that time as well.
Yeah.
So the presenters, some of them prefer to do questions during it, and then some prefer to wait until the end. So it doesn't end up being you're not presenting for a full hour.
Mm. Yeah, and there was one thing that Pete Russell said to a question that I really liked the answer, because there was someone there who was thought that genetic engineering was going to be a solution to some of the weed problems. And I was a little bit surprised.
They were anti.
Were they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, they were presenting an argument because they wanted to hear their answer then. Mm. But Pete Russell had a great answer. He said, and this can apply to anything with GE, he said, if they're so confident that what they're doing is safe, then they should accept all the liability for it.
Okay.
And his argument was, so far none of them, with all these proposals for genetically engineered stuff, are prepared to accept liability for any problems.
I could be wrong about the person's position on it, but the...
The answer was good. I said to Pete after, I said, that's the... Because I got heavily involved in the GE thing years ago. And there's lots of arguments back and forth, and there's lots of PR arguments, but that's one that cuts through everything.
Yeah,
because you don't need to go and read the science if they're not prepared to back themselves.
I don't know. Like, it's a hard one for me because I actually have a really good friend who's a genetic engineer, and he specifically works on trying to work out how to make our crops resilient against introduced pests. Because they are on the rise, I don't actually have an opinion on the matter because I don't know enough, but I'm always interested in hearing the different perspectives from experts. Yeah, so maybe that's something that we can, someone who knows what they're is qualified to talk about it from a balanced perspective. If anyone is, it would be great Science Night topic.
It's What I liked about Pete Russell's answer was that it was a way of cutting through a whole lot of stuff.
Mm.
We just go, oh, yeah, okay, if they're not prepared, and it may not apply to every single piece of genetic engineering, and there's a lot of biotech stuff where there's different ways of doing it and some things are less risky than others. But basically, if someone won't accept liability for any damage that will arise out of their actions, and most companies do for stuff. I mean, for goodness sakes, if I order something in the mail and it doesn't turn up, it gets taken care of by the company. They go, okay, we'll sort it out.
Yeah.
So, something as simple as that is quite common these days for companies. But if they're not prepared to accept liability, that is a big red flag.
Yeah. And
you'd have to go issue by issue to be sure.
Yeah. And one thing I have learned is that I feel like we need to be really careful here, and we won't go down the track of discussing GE too much, but because neither of us are experts. But one thing I have learned is that it's not just a simple cut and dry topic, and most people don't actually understand what it even is or what it means, and it doesn't have the same meaning across the board, simple explanation. I don't know,
Craig's show, Over the Fence, he's trying to get John Carapiet from G3NZ for an interview at some point, so Craig might have something for us that's not you and really me having a conversation.
I think it's really important, though, to always present a balanced viewpoint.
Now we've talked about a whole lot of things, but not what's coming up, and we've got like a minute left of the show. So what?
Okay. So most importantly, is coming up is Repair Cafe.
Yeah.
So people are aware, Repair Cafe is actually on the second Saturday of every month.
Yeah.
From 10 to 12. So okay. 10 a.m. to 12.
At
the Stewart Street Hall on Stewart Street. So it's 3 Stewart Street, where the Growers Market is. So it's every second Saturday of the month. Yep, 10 a.m.
Okay.
The last Repair Cafe, I think they couldn't even get through everything.
Oh, right.
They ran out of time.
You need more repairers.
Yeah.
If anyone's...
We could definitely do with more repairers. But keep bringing your stuff, because it's doing really well. They're repairing a lot of stuff. I'll bring up our figures, but it's such a valuable community service, the Repair Cafe.
Yeah, it sounds like the demand is there, clearly.
Oh, yeah. Definitely the demand is there. So we had the last Repair Cafe, there were 34 kgs of waste prevented from landfill.
Okay.
Yep. There were 33 items fixed, and there were 559 CO2 emissions prevented. So they're great stats.
Okay.
Mm.
Interesting.
Mm.
And that's good. And I know for your funders, you probably have to have stats.
I think it's not just for our funders. I think it's really good for people to be able to see what is actually happening every month.
Yeah.
What we're doing. And bear in mind, like 33 items fixed, that's within that 2-hour time frame, and they couldn't get to everything. So I'm guessing that people will be bringing that stuff back next month.
There'll be a queue at the door before you get there to set up.
It's a really beautiful environment in there as well. I know Nick, who is the Repair Cafe coordinator.
Yeah.
Have you met Nick yet?
I'd love
to get her on the show next month.
Yeah, for sure.
To chat and talk with you. So she's one of a team. There's a team of volunteers, but Nick is spearheading that, leading that team. She said it was like Antiques Roadshow, because there were lots of old...
Older
items coming and being repaired, which I think is beautiful, because we see so much stuff ending up in Cahoo's Nest or the landfill, because if something breaks, you know, and you don't have the skills to fix them, or you can't afford to get them fixed, or you don't know someone who can.
Yeah.
It's such a shame, especially if it's sentimental. And I think that's really lovely.
Yeah.
That there were so many older items getting fixed.
And just before we go, Deep Rising, the film, you're saying more interest in that?
So Deep Rising played the Thursday before Maui Dolphin Day this month. And it was – so Phil and Peggy Oakey were talking at organising that, and Phil spoke at it. They had a – it was standing room only by the end. And we're guesstimating about 50 people packed into the theatre. Once people were sitting on the floor and the couch was dragged in and that, and people, up to 10 people had to be turned away. So we've actually had quite a few requests for another showing of that. So Deep Rising have permitted the film to be played again at no charge. So
okay,
yeah. So I've just got to go back and see if I can organise for another showing of that at the old school.
Yeah. So it's a good film, folks. It's got, as I imagined, beautiful footage of all the crazy and weird, wonderful creatures they have in the deep sea, but also the politics and the story. And they did really well. They got inside a deep sea mining company, a guy with the money wanting to do it, and he seemed to give them the runner. That like they could film him doing all sorts of things.
Wow.
You know, like
I haven't seen it. I couldn't make it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so I also want to see
it. You want to see this? That's the main reason it's been reshown, folks.
I've had a few girlfriends talking about the narrator, about who were there.
Oh, Jason
Momoa. How lovely it was, the narration.
He's got a very deep voice, Jason Momoa. You don't really... when you see him, he's so big, it kind of suits.
But Aquaman.
Yeah. But when you just hear it by itself, you're like, well, that is a deep voice. It's... They did a good job. The filmmakers did a really good job all round. So
yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. So I mean, when I say that I genuinely have had lots of requests for another show.
It's not just you,
but it's not just me. Looking forward to that.
All right,
keep your eye out, and if you want to see what's happening or get up to speed with all our events, because we're constantly uploading new events. You can head over to our Facebook page, find us, Whangaroa Environment Centre. You can find our website is whaingaroa.org.nz, and if you want to get in touch with me personally, you can email me at envirocentre@whaingaroa.org.nz or pop into the Environment Centre. We're open Tuesday to Friday from 12 to 3pm.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Jasmine.
Thank you, Aaron.
Okay, folks, end of the show for the day. I'll see you again tomorrow morning.